Just a quick disclaimer that this podcast was recorded prior to the announcement that the Bucks would only have one joint practice against the New York Jets rather than two.
He ended up saying, we're bringing you a lava cake, out of chocolate lava cake. I said, we'll put a scoop of ice cream in it too. He goes, okay.
Bucks fans, here he is. He's back. The sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman. This is his podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. But it's all about the sage, and everything is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford dealerships, 63-plus years, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on the east side. And the Giant is back. That means the biggest, baddest, most incredible car dealership, a remodeled version, a futuristic version of Bill Curry Ford, is very close, but they're open now and they've got all kinds of construction savings pricing. Sean Sullivan, the general manager, he's got the Ira Kaufman discount for you. He's got a nationwide lifetime warranty on all new vehicles. He's got $500 just for you to order a vehicle with no deposit through their website, BillCurryFord.com. Their custom concierge service is fantastic and so easy. Check that out, BillCurryFord.com. They've got great pre-owned inventory, and the huge benefit is that Sean is there for you to reach out. Email, phone, when you pop in, Sean Sullivan, he'll help you, guide you with that personal touch of a general manager of a huge dealership. You don't find that anywhere else. He loves the Bucks. Feel free to talk football with him, BillCurryFord.com. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Go there. Check out what they do for business owners and, of course, homeowners that have disasters in their home. Fire, flood, mold, storm damage, whatever it might be. Florida's Elite Restoration. They're your first phone call 24/7. They'll give you a free evaluation, and they'll come out to your property. And if you move forward with them and you mention Ira Kaufman or Joe Bucks Fan when you first call, they're going to give you $500. Maybe that's for your deductible. Maybe that's just cash back. But Florida's Elite Restoration, they're fantastic. You need someone to fight for you against these insurance companies to get your money when you have this type of disaster. And we see it all the time in Florida. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. They're licensed mold remediation specialists. 24/7, call them. Get that free evaluation. Make them part of your disaster plan. And Ira, Big Storm Beer, that's the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. We'll talk more about them later. BigStormBrewery.com. See all the tap rooms, the beers, the menus, the incredible food. Ybor City, Clearwater, just south of Ulmerton Road on 49th Street. Other tap rooms are in Odessa off State Road 54 and Orlando at the Amway Center and Cape Coral. BigStormBrewery.com. All right, Sage, now it's all eyes on you. We got to talk about that football game on Friday night. I know you were out at practice at One Buck Palace today. Big week for the Bucks ahead. And of course, we have to touch on some of the aftermath of some serious nonsense that has kept me up at night, pounding my fist against the wall. How are you, Ira?
I'm doing well, Steve. A big shout out to the Buck organization, Todd Bowles in particular. I think I speak for Mr. DeKemper on this one. When they said that this practice was going to be 1 o'clock, women of red, 1 o'clock, I'm driving over, I'm thinking, are they really going to go outside at 1 o'clock? I'm looking at my dashboard. It's like 99 degrees. It's read. Well, we get there and we're told that we're going in inside the Glazer shed, inside the bubble. So that really made for a very pleasant Sunday. I haven't shared any notes with Lee about this practice today, but I thought it was a good one. Not a lot of balls on the ground. The offense, I thought, was sharp. Both quarterbacks, sharp. And Steve and Lee, a guy that we have to start talking about, and I think Steve's already posted something on it. And I asked a question about Trey Palmer, and then it was a follow-up question about Trey Palmer. Guys, this is a sixth-round pick. Now, Jason Light, he's got a knack. Once in a while, he comes up with this late-round gem. He might have done it again. Now, as Bowles was quick to point out, Steve, doing it in practice, you know, you don't want to go overboard. But Bowles said he, quote, flashed during the game Friday, which he did. Not only was it a very good throw by Mayfield into that left corner, but it was a very good catch and very good acrobatics getting his feet down in bounds. I mean, that looked like a professional TD reception right there. You know, that looked like Godwin, Evans, Devontae Adams. That really looked professional. And it was in a game. Game didn't count, but it counts for Trey Palmer. Bowles likes this guy. What's not to like, Steve? He's got speed. They need that. He caught a long bomb today in practice. The guy's flashing all the time. Bowles said he also looked good on special teams Friday night, which they chart. So the Bucs might have landed somebody right here. I know that the right guard struggled, and the first-round pick is hurt, but they might have hit a big one with this Trey Palmer kid. We will see. Got a long way to go, but so far, so good there.
Huge. I mean, Jason Light, he got Scotty Miller late in the draft. I believe it was sixth round. Tyler Johnson contributed as a rookie, some huge catches, even in the playoffs as a rookie. You had Chris Godwin, third-round pick, so if this could be the next guy in the string here. But Ira Lee, I wanted to run this past you as it relates to Palmer. Todd Bowles' comments today, you know, he actually threw his hands in the air, Ira. I think he was responding to you. He said, quote, "You can flash in practice because it's kind of, you can't touch most of the guys and they're running free most of the time, but he flashed in the game, blah, blah, blah." So wait a minute. So Bowles is saying that you can't touch receivers and they're running free all the time. And then on the other side, he says, you know, well, you can't really tackle because we're not hitting. It's like, what is going on in practice? It's like, it just like it devolves incredibly. And then they're supposed to evaluate quarterbacks in practice when Bowles himself is sort of saying these guys aren't covered.
Begs the question, Lee, whether your practice performance is really paramount. Is it really relevant as compared to what you do under the lights, even though they call it exhibition football? To me, just judging from Bowles' comments, now maybe just because he was talking about a rookie without a track record, Lee, but Steve's right. He went out of his way to talk about what did Palmer do Friday night against another team in a competitive situation. He showed up. You noticed him. He made an impact. That really impressed Bowles. And I don't know how many other young Buck players made that kind of impact in Bowles' mind. But Trey Palmer did. And that counts. Now, Gage was out there today, Lee. You saw him. He looks healthy. He's catching the balls. On the depth chart, he looks like the third guy behind Evans and Godwin. I got no problem with that. But, Lee, I'm telling you right now, I'd be flabbergasted if Trey Palmer doesn't make this football team. I think that's a given. The only question is, how much playing time is he going to get? How many snaps is he going to get if the guys ahead of him don't get hurt? Lee, he's got something the other guys don't. He's got the ability to stretch that field. And I think that's very, very important for Canales, very attractive for Canales. And it's a big, big weapon that they didn't normally have since maybe Antonio Brown departed, Lee. So right now, I'm pretty intrigued with this Trey Palmer guy.
Well, there's a guy that intrigues me much more than Palmer. Although Palmer made a hell of a play the other night, and it wasn't so much the catch that impressed me about Palmer's touchdown against the Steelers. It was his footwork. That was Mike Evans-level footwork, how he got those 2 feet down. But there's a receiver that's impressing me much more than Palmer. That's just Devin Tompkins. And like Palmer, he is fast. Now, Tompkins didn't do a whole lot today. He didn't do a whole lot in the game. But as far as day-to-day, every day in practice, training camp practice, Tompkins flashes every day. You know, Palmer's coming on strong. To his credit, he's getting better. He's getting better as training camp comes along. The first week of training camp, Palmer didn't impress me that much. But he's getting better. And he had a really nice practice today. So that's good that he's, as Arians would say, you're stacking up practices. He had a good game. He had a good, followed it up with a good practice. So we'll see. And I like Steve's point about practice. Today was touch football. Literally, it was touch football. As soon as the defender touched you, you got the whistle blown. The play's over. It was touch football. And this is where myself and some people in the Bucs organization have a difference of opinion. People with the Bucs are kind of getting on me. Hey, you're not giving the running backs any credit. Well, you're not allowed to tackle them. Shouldn't they be getting 10 yards a crack? Give me a break. And they're not. And the running back, the running game stunk out loud against Steelers. Flat out stunk out loud. And they're not doing that great in practice. If you're not tackling, if you're not hitting in practice, you better be getting 10 freaking yards of carry, and they're not. So I don't know why they're getting on me for being critical of the run game.
Steve, a couple of good points by our man DeKemper here. One on Tompkins. He's not wrong. The practices that I've gone to, and I've gone to a bunch, I noticed Tompkins. Now, Steve, that goes back to how much can you really tell from underwear football, or there's no hitting, and there's no fear of going across the middle and getting laid out. And that's a factor. And certainly Tompkins didn't play as noticeably well as Palmer did Friday night. But Tompkins looks like a player, Steve. He could be a player for the Bucs. He wasn't a bad returner last year. He wasn't anything special, but he wasn't bad. And I think he might improve in that area, too. Steve, for Lee's other point about the running game, they looked lousy. Why did they look lousy? Because there's no push. Steve, there's no physicality. And I don't want to hear all these Buck fans jumping in on this podcast saying, well, wait a minute, we didn't have Wirfs, and we didn't have Jensen, and we didn't have this guy. Steve, T.J. Watt and Cam Hayward didn't play. So that's an even playing field. I don't want to pick on one or two plays in particular, Steve, but I am so tired, as Buck Nation is tired, of 4th-and-1 and going nowhere, trying to be physical and getting no push. I mean, Steve, this is an old song. It's a sad song. We saw it all of last year. That's why, Lee, I was screaming about Brady. Let Brady keep it. He's good at it. Let him do it. The physicality up front, I just don't see it. Maybe it'll change, but we don't know about Jensen. I'm not sure. I'm just not sure about this O-line. Steve, you said it's going to be a lot better. I don't know if you're still feeling that way.
Yeah, I still feel that way. I actually do. I said last podcast toward the end that I expected a miserable day from the offensive line on Friday night, and I wouldn't worry about it, so I'm going to stick with that. And of course, you know, things don't look as bad when you rewatch it, but it doesn't look great, obviously. There were some serious problems with Cody Mout getting shoved around and Gedeke making too many mistakes and just not enough push. I do want to go on the record. I'm not a Devin Tompkins guy at all. You have to be an incredible player when you measure less than 5'7" at your pro day and you're 160 pounds. You got to be an incredible player to be able to overcome and do something in the NFL. I thought he was barely an average returner. I think he looked better as a returner last year because we've had such terrible returners here, you know, and he did make a great play in that preseason game. He got drilled in the backfield, kept his balance and got like an extra 7 yards. It was only like a 4-yard gain on a reception, but that was an incredible play as far as a balance and the kind of play you'd see Alvin Kamara make. But I just don't see it at all. I don't see a place for him on the receiving corps. Doesn't mean they won't throw him a few balls like they used to Jalen Darden, but I'm not seeing it. Or the offensive line, it looked ugly, but also you didn't have two starters out there, and that makes a difference. Todd Bowles, I'm not sure why he rested those guys. I thought Tristan Wirfs wants the work and wants to make some adjustments, but maybe you have an opinion, Ira, why so many players, 15 key players, were rested in that game.
You know, Lee, if he rests 15 players, starters, in the third preseason game, I would have no problem with it. I'd have no problem with it. You got to get the guy, make sure he's healthy going into the season opener. But you don't often see it, Lee, on the first preseason game. It was a little surprising. I think Wirfs needs some action in making the transition. I'm confident he'll make it. Wirfs is a special, special player. Special, special talent. It's been done before. It's not unprecedented to move from right tackle to left. If anybody can do it, it's Tristan Wirfs. You know, I've got a lot of confidence in him. But I would have liked to have seen him out there, against another uniform. Now, you know, they'll scrimmage twice against the Jets this week and play the Jets. I got to think Wirfs is going to get some action. He needs it. He may not play in the third game. So we'll see about that. I was a little surprised, Lee, that they sat those guys. One guy they didn't sit, Lee, that we have to talk about a little bit, is Zion McCollum. The good and the bad, the classic with a young player. He gives and he takes. Very nice pick, Lee, but I didn't like his play on the first touchdown. He didn't look good, and he's not a good tackler right now. He's just not. To me, a month ago, he was very much in the mix for the nickel job, which is supposed to be wide open, and he was in the mix. And now I don't think he's in the mix, and I'll tell you why. And Rondé Barber, of course, is the quintessential example. Lee, you play that slot corner, you're in the middle of the field. You better be good in run support. You better be good. And God knows, Todd Bowles knows about the qualifications of defensive backs, having been a former one himself and a pretty good one. You got to be able to tackle. Now, nobody's Rondé Barber, Lee, but you got to be not only a willing tackler, but you got to have some decent technique. Don't leave your feet too early. McCollum's got a long way to go, Lee, in that area. I think he has taken himself out of the nickelback competition. So that leaves him as the third corner behind a couple of pretty good corners. He'll see action this year, but he's got stuff to work on, Lee. He's not polished yet.
Yeah, I think, and I don't know how to pronounce his name. Is it Izean, Gano man from Rutgers? He seems to be the guy they're going to be looking at nickel. McCollum hasn't taken that step that you usually see guys do from rookie year to second year. He's not a whole lot better than he was last year, which is, he was borderline invisible last year. However, there's a big however here. He's excellent on special teams. He is Ryan Smith-esque. And I know when people hear Ryan Smith, they want to slam their head through a wall. He was horrible at cornerback, no question about it, but he was very good at special teams. And that's McCollum, from what I see right now, he's a clone of Ryan Smith. You don't want to see him on the field at corner, but you want to see him on the field at special teams.
Sage, I want to reset something for the fans here who might have been a little disconnected. And, of course, we got to talk about the quarterbacks because it's critical here. It's on everybody's mind. Now, the Sage reported on this podcast that he was told point blank, looked in the face by a Buck source that he trusts, that, hey, it's Kyle Trask is 99 yards behind Baker Mayfield in a 100-yard dash. And that the plan is to have Mayfield start week one. Now, that, of course, went all over the place. Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports made it a feature story. And, of course, predictably, local media here ran to a social media to scream fake news, Ira's guessing, all that kind of stuff. Now, I want to point out, Ira, that the Buccaneers organization, and may you tell me if I'm wrong, Ira, Lee, you want your opinion here. I didn't see the Bucs organization running out to their guys that they're very close with that would do them a favor if they wanted to, like an Adam Schefter or a Jeff Darlington, who have deep roots inside the Buccaneers organization, for them to go out and refute the report and put their name on it as calling it bogus. No Jay Glazer appeared to say that's horse crap. Nobody got to Mike Florio at NBC Sports where he felt compelled to say, this is ridiculous, but all the locals are screaming fake news. What does that mean to you, Ira Lee?
I hadn't even thought about that point about the national guys, Steve. The Bucs are not alone. Lee, other teams do it. They reach out to these guys. They so-called plant a story that they want out there on a national basis. Steve's right. They haven't done this with my report from Thursday. The Bucs aren't happy with my report, but I haven't heard them say it's wrong. I've heard other reporters say it's premature, it's wrong, it's a guess. Nobody knows who my source is, and I ain't giving it up. But if I didn't trust the source, I wouldn't have reported the story. It's somebody that knows what they're talking about, and I went with it. The official announcement, and I say official in quotes, is about a week away. I think it's probably a week away from today. To me, it's after the Jets game, maybe the next day. Bowles comes out and says, so-and-so is going to be our quarterback in Minneapolis. I'm sure it's going to be Baker Mayfield. But, Steve, that's a very strong point. The Bucs do have connections with national guys, as do all teams. And we haven't heard anything to the contrary on that front, Lee.
Well, Steve asked, what do you think of the people locally that are saying it's wrong, it's guess? That doesn't mean jack shit to me. These are the same people that said when Steve and I about Arians was going to be the coach, just killed us until that we were right. I didn't hear a peep out of them after Arians came out, after the news came out, the Bucs announced on a Tuesday night, mind you. The part of the story was Steve reported that Arians would be announced by a Tuesday. These guys killed us, basically because they got caught with their pants down. That's why they killed us. And, by the way, on Tuesday, Arians was announced. How'd that happen? So the fact that these these guys are all bent out of shape. Doesn't mean jack spit to me. Number two, and I don't think Steyer and I are at liberty to elaborate what's going on here, but I could tell you, if, for a wrong story, if it's wrong, it's not, but if it's wrong, Bucks sure are spending a whole lot of time trying to figure out who Ira Source is for a wrong story.
Yeah, I just got to put it out there, Ira. I think it's just stunning. It's kind of sad because, you know, I said this to you. I put it on Twitter, but I said it to you privately. You know, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, a guy breaks a story. The other reporters, you know, say, hey, man, good scoop. We'll see if you get burned on that one. And you move on. You don't just start saying the guy's not credible and this is a guess and this is BS and this is nonsense. I mean, it doesn't work that way. It shouldn't work that way in the business, but I guess that's the way it is today.
I'll live with my track record, Steve. I got here in 85, 38 years, Buccaneers. Say I've broken about 50 stories over that time in general. The only one I remember that I got wrong, and I you know, you could argue whether I was wrong or not, was that Brett Favre was going to be a Buccaneer. But I'll say this. When I wrote that story and put it out at 11 o'clock at night, everybody from John Gruden to the Buck PR staff, to the general manager, and to ownership. Yes, and to ownership. All went to bed that night saying, we got Brett Favre. Everybody in the Buck organization, they were setting up press conferences for Brett Favre. He was going to be a Buck. It didn't work because they weren't in control of the situation. Ted Thompson dealt them elsewhere. But, you know, for anybody to say that the Bucks didn't think they had a done deal with Brett Favre, that's wrong, because you can't have a better source than I had on that story, and it turned out they didn't get him. And who knows? History could be totally different if Brett Favre would have came to the Bucks in 08, which turned out to be Gruden and Bruce Allen's last season in Tampa. And if they would have got Brett Favre instead of Jeff Garcia still being under center, who knows what would have happened? I'll rest with my track record, Lee. It's pretty darn good.
Well, this will make you feel better, Ira, about the Brett Favre thing. About a week after the trade collapsed because Ted Thompson decided he wasn't going to trade him within the conference, Favre and his wife were going somewhere. I can't remember who, but a small paper in Wisconsin did a story of the pilot that was flying Brett Favre and his wife around. It was a private jet. And he said Favre was on the phone with Gruden and Allen. They were making plans to come to Tampa.
We'll close this segment or part of it with me saying, I guarantee that nobody looked at you after that report and said, Ira, you're guessing. I come on. They didn't say that. They may have said you got burned on it or whatever, but they didn't say you were right. Guessing. So it's just shameful, Sage. But let's get...
Yeah, and Steve, one more thing about that Favre situation in the summer of 08. I went out very strong that Favre was going to be a Buck. Steve, ESPN literally, and I'm not exaggerating, Lee, you know I'm right about this. They had six people on this story, 24/7. Ed Werder, from Ed Werder on down. And none of them had any idea how close the Bucks were to landing Favre. They were, Bucks were always mentioned as one of the five teams Favre could go to. None of them had the kind of sources that I did on that story. And there were a ton of people sniffing around for that story. And I was the only one that reported how close Favre was to the Bucks.
2008, you were a young man, barely 65. It was a great time. It was a great time. Hey, Sage, the Bromosa. Bromosa, that is the Tangerine IPA award-winning from Big Storm Brewery. It is in most public stores and most places where you find craft beer in the Tampa Bay area and beyond. It is amazing. Just try it. End of story. All the great Big Storm beers can be seen at BigStormBrewery.com. And, of course, they are in the Big Storm tap rooms. Big Storm Brewery, that's where the Sage will be. Opening day against Minnesota, Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff. We'll be out there early. There's going to be an announcement coming very soon with the buffet price, a sort of a pregame tailgate. Sage will be schmoozing. Good time. We will announce the location as well, BigStormBrewery.com. Right now, you can go to BillCurryFord.com and start shopping for a vehicle while you listen to the podcast. What better thing is there to do? BillCurryFord.com. And our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration. You need a disaster plan. The peak of hurricane season is around the corner. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Learn about them. Get their phone number and all their information in your phone so you know who to call when disaster strikes. Hey, Ira, the quarterbacks went out there. Baker Mayfield was good. Kyle Trask was bad. I mean, let's just call it as we see it. You know, they weren't lining up for Pro Bowl invitations, but, you know, essentially Mayfield did not have a first series because they obviously decided in advance, we're going to hand off four times if we have to and see what happens. And that didn't go too well. And then, you know, then he had the touchdown drive and was 8 of 9. Trask, first series, Ira, he comes out there. And I think it's important. I wrote a story about this. It sort of got lost in the shuffle. But on the second down play before his interception, Sage, he threw a short ball to Kalen Geiger, almost like a super quick inside, you know, version of a wide receiver screen almost. He fired it to Geiger. It was behind him. Geiger caught it and fell to the ground. And Trask sort of waved his hand like, what are you doing or what happened? And maybe Trask threw it behind him because Geiger went too far on the route. Or maybe Trask was just mad at himself. I don't know, but it set up that he was clearly flummoxed. You can see it on TV. It set up the 3rd and 19, and he threw the worst kind of interception right over the middle of the field at midfield, you know, to a waiting safety who made an easy play on the ball. So to me, those are two bad plays right there. Especially, it's even worse if he got rattled on his first series playing against a bunch of scrubs because the backup guy dropped or didn't, you know, didn't run the right route. You just can't do that. So Trask recovered a little bit, but it's a big win for Mayfield. How do you think everyone sees it at $1, even though nobody was really saying anything other than Todd Bowles on Saturday morning saying, oh, they both did some good things.
Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I thought it was slightly telling when somebody tried to suggest that Mayfield played with more regulars in front of him or around him than Trask. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Bowles stopped that question in its tracks and disagreed and wanted it out there that both guys had the same opportunity. So he wasn't going there in terms of maybe providing an excuse for Trask. Lee, not so much the pick because, all right, you can throw a bad pass and try to get into a tight window. You know, the down and distance was formidable. But Lee, one thing we've been saying about Trask is he looks more mobile than he has been in the past. And boy, I didn't see any mobility. One thing surprised me. Mayfield sprinted right. Mayfield sprinted left from the play call from Canales. I didn't see Trask doing that very much. Not as much as Mayfield. As a result, he hit the ground 3 times, Lee. I didn't see any sense of Trask's enhanced mobility. He kind of looked like a sitting duck in that pocket.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was, you know, the plays that were called that maybe Mayfield, given the fact that he is mobile, that they called specific plays for him to roll out or not, sprint out or not. That could be, but Trask didn't look comfortable. Now, like in practice, I don't know if that's, you know, going back to the first subject we spoke of, that, you know, the defense is kind of handcuffed in practice, and right, they were not handcuffed. Steelers were anything but handcuffed. Maybe that was it. I don't know.
Steve, it doesn't get any easier this week because 2 practices against the Jets and then the game. Without exaggeration, Steve, the Jets have a heck of a defense. I mean, they got a real defense, the Jets. And that's part of the reason Rodgers wanted to become a Jet. They're on the cusp of being relevant, the Jets. It's going to be a test for Trask and Mayfield to look good, I think, in these scrimmages.
But over the past week, and Steve wrote the story, Bowles was saying there's some good things that Brady's not here. And one of those good things as a result of Brady not being there, that they're not getting much attention. It's quieter. There's less of a circus. There's less of a – and that drove me up a wall. You want the circus. You want relevancy because you're winning. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you don't want the circus. If you're winning, the circus is going to come. Like it or not, the circus is going to come. You want that. You want to be relevant because you're winning. That just drives me out of my mind. And there's a great story. I heard this on Rich Eisen's show where a guy from NFL Films, you know, they were talking about Hard Knocks and the Jets. And the Jets don't want Hard Knocks there. And other teams don't want to deal with Hard Knocks because, ooh, it's a distraction. Oh, my gosh. You know, calamity will collapse. Well, here's a great story that Steve Sable told one of his colleagues that was on Rich Eisen's show about NFL Films being around and attention. Steve Sable went to a Packers training camp when Vince Lombardi was around. There was no more hard-ass coach, no more I got to control the message, no more, you know, distractions kind of guy that would freak out about distractions than Lombardi. Well, this guy, Steve Sable, was kind of scared. First time he ever went to a Packers training camp practice. And he was scared of Lombardi. He thought Lombardi was going to go ballistic about something. So this guy, at the time, we're talking about prehistoric history with the NFL, he was using film. So he only brought enough film for shooting one day of practice. And after he shot practice, it was all over with. And Steve Sable went up to Vince Lombardi. Just for people who don't know, Steve Sable was one of the founding fathers of NFL Films, the son of the guy who Ira got in the Hall of Fame, Ed Sable. No easy task for Ira, but he did it. So Steve Sable goes up to Lombardi after practice. He goes, "Coach, I just want to thank you for letting me be here. I'm leaving. I really appreciate your hospitality and letting me shoot." And Lombardi turns to him and goes, "You're coming back tomorrow, aren't you?" He said, "Well, no, Coach, I'm not, because I want you back here tomorrow." And Sable was blown away. He's like, "What's going on here?" And he's like, "Well, I can't, Coach. I only brought one day's worth of film. I have no more film." And Lombardi said, "You're coming back tomorrow." So the next day, what Sable did, he pretended he was shooting practice, even though his camera was empty. And Lombardi told him, he goes, "These guys busted their tail in practice. Best practice we ever had, because they knew you were shooting. They didn't want to embarrass themselves." So for all the hard-ass coaches out there and the people screaming about distractions, it's just the opposite.
We better get NFL films down here in a hurry, Steve.
To reset what Lee was talking about, Todd Bowles was on NFL Network, and they asked him about, you know, the post-Brady era, and he said that he thinks the players bond better without all the Brady noise, and he also said that the younger players play more freely with less stress because they don't have the spotlight. So Bowles likes that. Now, it doesn't make a lot of sense when you need these guys to get used to distractions and you need them to be able to bond, even if times are really good and you're 3-0 and you're the toast of the NFL. I get the upside of temporarily, but it just feels really weird to hear a coach saying, "Hey, no one's paying attention to us, and I like it because it helps players play better." I don't know about that.
It's been a sea change here in Tampa, guys, because, the simplest way to put it, they were the hunter with Tom Brady. They were the hunter for 3 years. You know, nobody's paying any attention to them. We'll see how they deal with expectations. You know, Lee, you've heard a couple of guys say they got a chip on their shoulder. Well, they used to have a Lombardi trophy in the trophy case. Now they got a chip on the shoulder. I'd rather go with the Lombardi trophy.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, it's chip on his shoulder stuff. They sure looked like it the other night, didn't they? Oh, they had a chip on their shoulder, right?
Ooh. Hey, Ira, now this is something that you talked about early in the offseason, and it was picked up on a little bit later, but you knew this from talking to Bowles. Now, in Week 18 last year, the Bucs lost to Atlanta, and they pulled a bunch of starters, and the defensive backups were miserable, absolutely horrible in that game. And here we come to Friday's preseason game. 9 defensive starters are sitting, and the defense can't tackle. They're awful, miserable, absolutely couldn't tackle. And this was a focus of Bowles all offseason, tackling. And then his backups come out, and they can't tackle, and he was blasting the tackling after the game, and everybody knows it was bad. But what do you think of that when you see what you saw in Week 18? Here they come out after a big offseason focus, and they can't tackle. And obviously we hope the starters can tackle, but they're not getting that time in preseason. Bowles already implied that we're going to get great work and open up the defense because it's not on national television against the Jets in practice. And he implied that the starters are going to sit next Saturday in New Jersey.
I think it's driving Bowles up a wall in terms of this inept tackling, guys turning 5-yard passes into 12-yard gains. It's just driving Bowles crazy. Lee, he's been here 4 years working with the defense. You would think it's getting better, even with the backups, the assistant coaches. Is it the players? Is it the coaching? Is it development? Lee, this has been going on. The run defense has been slipping. And what have we heard from this coaching staff? It's a big priority. We've heard it from the players. Lavonnie David talked about it rightly. We got to get back to where we were. Stout against the run. Make it third and eight on other teams. I mean, that's what other teams are doing to the Bucs, Lee. It's third and eight every time you turn around. And the Bucs used to, Buck defense used to do that to other teams. And now they don't. I think it's just driving Bowles crazy. With one exception. Well, Lavonnie David is one. And there's one more. Antoine Winfield. Those guys are form tacklers, very good tacklers. But Lee, two guys out of 11? I don't like that ratio.
Ira, could it be, and I don't know this, if they're not allowed to tackle in practice, why should we expect them to tackle in a game?
Well, why do other teams tackle better than the Bucs, though, Lee?
Well, I don't know what other teams practice. I don't know if other teams are forbidding their defenders from tackling their teammates or not. I'm not there, so I can't say.
Well, in terms of league restrictions, though, Lee, I mean, it's league-wide.
Is it a league restriction that you can't tackle in practice?
No, you could tackle to the ground, Ira. You can do all kinds of things. They just don't want to do it.
Well, they got to change something, Steve. Now, I know Dalvin Cook's not a Viking, and that's a break for the Bucs in week one. But they're going to face some darn good running teams, running backs. And what we're seeing right now, Steve, it's just not acceptable.
All right. Now, Ira, I got to throw this out there for the people who doubt the Sage's report on Baker Mayfield. All right. This is for them. Okay. If there is still a quarterback competition and we saw what happened on Friday night, if you didn't have your report, Ira, would you say that Trask has any chance of getting this thing after Friday night?
You'd say he's got a minuscule chance, minuscule, assuming both guys are starting at the same starting block, which I don't think is true. And I had somebody else say the same thing, Lee, that the same point that you've been hammering away, and I think rightfully so, on this podcast. And I heard somebody else break it down the same exact way in terms of you got to look at the dynamics. Now, Steve, this assumes Bowles is getting to make the call. I hope Bowles gets to make the call. I don't know how many people are going to have votes in this. Maybe the Glazers have a vote. Maybe Light's got a vote. Canales, who knows? I think ultimately, you got to trust Bowles. Bowles is the head coach. Light gets the players, and Bowles uses them the way he sees fit. And if Bowles makes the decision, Lee, it goes back to your point. He's on the hot seat. He's looking at a fifth straight losing season if he gets this wrong. And is he going to trust the guy that's thrown nine passes that hasn't outplayed the guy with more experience? So,
Sage, Lee, any other thoughts about Friday night's game? Obviously, we want to see a bounce back by the offensive line. Any other thoughts?
As Ira said, it was unwatchable. The Bucs were awful. Sure, that was a nice play here, nice play there. But overall, poor effort by the Bucs, just poor. And it leads people to believe, rightly or wrongly, that the Bucs are low-key tanking. I don't know if that's true or not. I can see where people can come to that conclusion. I certainly understand that, but my big thing about the whole game was, and this isn't very popular inside the walls of One Buck Palace, but the Bucs had the worst rushing attack. I've been harping on this all offseason. People are tired of me talking about it. People are tired of reading about me, writing about it. Bucs were the worst running team in the league last year. Their only upgrade was a guy who didn't even have 250 yards last year. And oddly enough, he looked like their best running back. So, hey, if you don't upgrade the worst in the league, what are we talking about here?
And Steve, a week ago when you asked me, Ira, what are you going to be looking for in this Pittsburgh preseason game? I didn't hesitate, and I said, can they run the ball? That doesn't mean I want the Bucs to be a running team in 2023. I don't. It's hard to win games when you are a predominantly running team in a pass-happy league. It's difficult. You can't be 32nd. That just hurts everything. It hurt Brady, and it's going to hurt Mayfield/Trask, whoever the quarterback is. Put a little fear in the other team's defense that you might run the ball, so they start creeping up. The linebackers, the secondary, creep up a little. Nobody crept up on the Bucs last year. Nobody. Except the bookies. They crept up on them. So, Steve, I wanted to see, I didn't say a robust running game, a passable running game, and I didn't see it, Steve. You could talk about the O-line missing guys. You could talk about whatever. I just pointed out the Steelers were missing their two best, maybe, defensive players overall.
Sure.
In Haywood and Watt. Steve, they don't run the ball well, and that's got to change. It's got to change.
And I'm not a proponent of the running game, but if Baker Mayfield's your quarterback, I really don't believe it's in the best interest of the Bucs to be putting the ball up 40 times a game.
Sage, the running backs combined, wide receivers had some handoffs and Mayfield scrambled a little, but Bucs running backs combined for 41 yards on 22 carries. And it was ugly. There's no spinning it. There were all the penalties, Ira, a ridiculous number of penalties, no running game. Do you guys agree with me before I keep going? Do you guys agree with me that it was predetermined that the opening series, they would run four times to get that first down, or they would run the first three. And then if they needed fourth down, they'd go for it to try to stimulate the running game and get these guys focused on run blocking. Do you buy that?
I do buy that. Yes, I do, Steve. Yes, I do.
All right, so Ira, here's my magic question. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but we got to ask the question. Was it so bad between the no running game and the sloppiness of the penalties left and right? Do you think it was so bad and bad tackling that it got the Glazers to like think, what are we doing here with this team? Do you think it's possible that it was that bad?
No. I don't think you're off base.
I do think he's off base. The Glazers, they're not quick twitch people. Lee's pointed out they've changed a lot of coaches, which they have. But I think they've been around long enough since 1995, Brian and Joel having a part of this team and watching this team, not to read too much into the preseason, certainly not too much into an opening preseason game. Lee, I don't agree with Steve there. I don't think the Glazers are going to overreact.
Hey, wait a minute. I didn't say that. I asked a question. Don't start assigning me the. I agree with you, Ira. I think it's too soon either. But the question had to be asked because it was so ugly.
Oh well, I say they will not overreact, Lee.
Well, yeah. I don't think they're overreacting as far as the first preseason game. Ira, you know the Glazers better than I. So I can only say what I think. And I noticed, and I don't ever remember seeing this before, I have not seen a member of the Glazer family, with the exception of Darcy Glazer. I have not seen a member of Team Glazer at practice yet this year. And so I'm thinking that they're preparing. They're not, how can I say this? I'm not saying they want the Bucs to lose. I'm not saying they want to get rid of Todd Bowles, but I think they're preparing just in case. I think they're preparing for a move. They want the Bucs to win, of course, but I think they're reading the tea leaves and it's not looking good. And so I think they're bracing. That's the best word. They're bracing themselves.
I think you're trying to say that they tend to be realistic too, Lee. They're not pie in the sky.
They're being realist. They're bracing for the worst.
It's right in a respect.
Is it possible they just couldn't afford sunscreen and didn't come out?
I will admit that Lee's point, it's unusual. It's atypical not to see the Glazers out there at some point in training camp. I don't think they were out there and Lee missed them. I don't think that's the case. I think they're still committed to this franchise, Steve.
Oh, sure.
Lee's going to Minneapolis. He will see the Glazers in Minneapolis. They will be there. They don't miss a regular season game. So you don't want to read too much into it, Steve. But they are realistic. In 2009, after firing Gruden, some people say, well, they didn't have any money because they were too involved with Man U. And that's why they went the cheap route with Raheem and this and that and the veteran purge. I don't know that that's all of it, Steve. I think they realized they came to the end of an arc. And, it was a good run. And so, you know, Brooks has to go and Ike Hilliard has to go and Warrick Dunn. I think they're feeling that way a little bit now. The end of an arc, the Brady era, and who knows what the future presents. But, Steve, the saving grace, in a sense, that damn division, I swear. I swear, if they were in another division, most other divisions, I'm not sure the Glazers would feel the same way that they could compete this year. I'm not sure about that.
Well, Jason Light said the Bucs could compete in any division, so we're going to go with that. Sage, the end of the arc never comes at Bill Curry Ford. We thank them. The deals are always flowing. And as we heard before, GM Sean Sullivan, he's got the Ira Kaufman podcast discount for you. He's got $500 just to order a new vehicle with their concierge service. No deposit. So easy. BillCurryFord.com. Or thanks to Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. And prepare for any kind of damage in your home by visiting now. Not just when you need it. Get ready now Florida's Elite Restoration. .com. Sage, you are a quite a young man there. I know Todd Bowles gave you some birthday greetings off the cameras in front of other media today. Talked about your healing from your broken bone there that you had earlier this month. And he's your good buddy and was not afraid to admit it, which I think is very interesting given the events of the last week. That must have gone over quite well with your media brethren, Ira. But Sage, say goodbye to the fans and give them a parting shot.
Well, Coach Bowles is a class act, as Lee has mentioned many times on this broadcast. Very classy, a man of conviction, a lot to prove as a head coach. I think even he would tell you that. He's not naive. But a lot of people are rooting for Bowles to succeed this season. There's a magic number. Maybe it's 9 in terms of a winning season, even if they don't make the playoffs. I think that would be a strong part of Bowles' resume going forward. So I do appreciate the comments from Bowles, and I wish him well on behalf of all Buck Nation for 2023.
All right, Sage. Well, we'll say goodbye to you. And I've watched the game already, Ira, but you can go watch your Chiefs against the Saints. Blaine Gabbert against Jameis Winston. It was a hell of a game. So have fun with that, Ira.
Ira can't. He doesn't have a DVR.
I can find it, Lee. If I need it, I can find it.